Joining us now are Ashton Carter, an Assistant Secretary of Defense in the first Clinton administration and senior advisor to the North Korean Policy Review from 1998 to 2000. He's in Boston. Mr. Carter, thanks for being with us.
Good to be here.
And Donald Kirk is a correspondent for the International Herald Tribune in Seoul. He joins us on the line from there. Thanks for being with us, Mr. Kirk.
Good morning.
Was the United States foolish to think that the North Koreans could be bargained with on this?
We've bargained with them in the past and gotten results. I think anybody is foolish to think that a bargain made with North Korea will be obeyed in its spirit and not just in its letter, or that North Korea can be trusted forever to give up weapons of mass destruction unless they're closely monitored.
Mr. Kirk, do you have anything to weigh in on that?
Well, I think the bargaining is still going on. One might say that the revelation by the North during James Kelly's visit earlier this month was part of the bargaining process. The South Korean government, I think, holds that view pretty strongly.
Mr. Carter, what's your appraisal of the fact that the administration apparently waited 12 days before making this public?
Well, I think the Bush administration also felt that this was a bargaining gambit by North Korea and therefore was taking some time to figure out what its response would be. Mm-hmm. I think, though, that we need to also bear in mind, this is more than a diplomatic gambit over the agreed framework negotiated in 1994. This is a brand new, technically different nuclear weapons program that they were caught proceeding with. The reason why we have time for diplomacy to work with this program is that it is a program that accumulates uranium at a very steady but rather slow rate. Mm-hmm. With the plutonium program in 1994, when I was in the Pentagon, we were just a few weeks away from North Korea unloading that plutonium and potentially making it into bombs. So the threat was more imminent then.
Since this news has been received in the United States, the question has often been raised, how does this complicate the administration's proposed policy on Iraq? Is it possible that the North Koreans have noticed the U.S. focus on Iraq, and this is their way of trying to draw attention back to them?
There are two sides, and there always have been, and as I've dealt with the North Koreans in their thinking. One is, what can I get for threatening? But there's another side of the North Korean mentality, which is maybe, just maybe, I'll be allowed to get away with this and become a nuclear state, in which case deterrence will be in play, and my regime will be protected behind a nuclear shield. And I think because a bomb in North Korea could undermine conventional deterrence on the Korean Peninsula and therefore make a horrible war more possible, because proliferation, if it gets started in that part of the world, could spread to South Korea, to Taiwan, to Japan. And then finally, we have to remember that North Korea might, in coming years, implode or suffer some kind of revolution. And in that case, you'd have a situation in which the nuclear weapons of North Korea could be commandeered, stolen, or sold and get into the hands of sub-state groups or terrorists. So for all these reasons, it's a serious matter.
Could I get both of you gentlemen to try and present for us what you see as the range of options that the Bush administration has in reacting to this event? For example, is there anything representing a military option?
There's certainly an option to defend South Korea, but I don't think there's any option to go into North Korea and blast away or to consider what we're considering with Iraq.
I mean, nothing like the Israeli raid on the Iraqi reactor in the late 1970s.
Oh, no. I don't think there's going to be anything like that. And I don't even think it's contemplated, except by some extremists who may not know the situation on the ground here. But if we did that, I think that quite aside from a terrific North Korean reaction, we're talking about a country that has a 1 million person army. It's granted, it's not the army that it was probably a few years ago before North Korea suffered all kinds of economic problems, but it's there and it's armed. And we're also talking about the possibility of a very strong reaction against the United States in the South. Mm-hmm. South Korea is a prosperous country. It's a booming, thriving country, and they don't want war here. I was here in 1994, incidentally, at the very time of this so-called crisis that Mr. Perry, who was then Defense Secretary, thinks brought us to the brink of war. Nobody felt a threat. It was just one of those sort of television or newspaper stories. But there wasn't a sense of an imminent threat at all.
My recollection of 1994 is rather different, and I think...
You were in the administration then.
Yes, I was, and Bill Perry was Secretary of Defense, and I remember distinctly that we did, in fact, plan an operation that would have struck its reactor and its reprocessing facility, and we were quite confident that we could destroy even an operating reactor without causing a radiological problem and destroy the reprocessing facility and shut the entire program at Yongbyon down. But there is no such thing in Korea as a surgical strike, because the likely result of such a strike would have been the swarming of 1.1 million North Korean soldiers who have an antiquated but quite fanatical army across the DMZ. The resulting war, which we also planned out in detail, and that plan still exists and is in effect in our forces in South Korea, provides for us to win that war and destroy the North Korean forces and regime within a few weeks. But it is an extremely bloody war. This isn't out in the desert of Arabia somewhere. This is a war that would be acted out in the suburbs of a teeming modern city, Seoul. Many, many thousands of people would be killed. So North Korea, I think, needs to understand that we're not in a position to let them go nuclear. And if those negotiations aren't successful, it could indeed bring us back to where we were in 1994, which was exceedingly dangerous.
If the only plausible reaction seems to be diplomatic, how do you pursue any kind of course of diplomacy with a government such as we've seen in North Korea who doesn't seem to cherish the agreements that it signs?
It's going to take some flexibility on the part of North Korea, which is a very secretive, reclusive, hermit state, to allow the level of verification that I think the United States and its allies are going to require in any deal on this uranium matter.
One thing we could do, and just remaining within the realm of diplomacy, is to, just for instance, not to supply the heavy crude oil that's provided for in the 1994 Geneva Agreement. We're supplying the North Korea every year with $80 to $90 million worth of heavy crude oil to help fulfill their energy needs until these light water reactors go online. We could stop doing that. This would not be a declaration of war by any means. This would be simply a suspension of our side of the 1994 agreement. So I think that that sort of thing could be done as a step considerably short of war.
Gentlemen, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Donald Kirk is a correspondent for the International Herald Tribune in Seoul, and in Boston, Ashton Carter, former Assistant Secretary of Defense, who now teaches at the Harvard School of Government.